D-Maze, Fingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. Joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Mitch Light, college football editor over at The Athletic. And Mitch, you might have been the one to edit Joe Rexroad's column looking at Indiana and Tennessee and how they're headed for an inevitable college football playoff showdown in terms of which team's in and which team's out. I mean, in your mind, are those the two teams it really comes down to for you, Indiana and Tennessee, as to who gets a final spot?
Well, I did edit his story, and I'm very protective of Joe. I would not let anyone else touch his fine work. That's definitely a possibility. There's obviously, as Joe touched on in his column, there's a lot of things that can happen, although I was just scratching out some things here, and there's a kind of surprisingly lack of marquee SEC games down the stretch. You know, Texas, Texas A&M, there's not a lot of quality. I'm kind of digressing here, but not a lot of opportunities for real quality wins by these SEC teams, so there's not many opportunities for losses, I guess you would say. So making the assumptions that we think will happen, Tennessee 10-2, Indiana 11-1, not in the Big Ten championship game, it very well could be. But, you know, again, with 2 weeks to go and a week of championship games, it's dangerous to assume things. But it's just a fascinating debate. It really is. You know, and it's funny because if we thought we'd be having these debates before maybe earlier in the year, before the season, we figured it would probably be an SEC team or a Big Ten team versus an ACC or Big 12, like the Big Two versus the other two. It's just the Big Ten is configured so weirdly this season with the four really good teams and then almost no middle class after that. So that's why you got a team like Indiana, which is obviously very good, but the resume is lacking right now.
A huge game this weekend, the aforementioned Indiana Hoosiers at Ohio State. This really does feel like the game where Indiana's fate could be sealed. In your mind, Mitch, if we assume that Indiana loses, of course, if they win, that's a feather in their cap. Assuming they lose this game, what is the largest margin of victory they can lose by in order for the committee to not go, ugh, I don't know about Indiana?
Yeah, it's always dangerous to put a number on that because, you know, a competitive 14-point game could turn into a 28-point game with a couple of bad bounces late. But I understand your question. I think if you're Indiana, you don't want to be down 21-3 at the end of the first quarter and just look really, like, alarmingly uncompetitive, that you just don't belong on the field. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, just everyone's got their kind of preconceived notion of what they think is going to happen. And certain committee members, you know, might be expecting different things. But I think a lot of us are a little worried for Indiana that that might be the case. Now, there's one development from late last night that could really change this game. Seth McLaughlin, Ohio State's starting center, who, if you don't watch Big Ten football, the last time you remember him is in the national semifinals, having trouble snapping the ball for Alabama as their long snapper. But he's had a very good year for Ohio State, kind of solidified that offensive line, and they've had major problems on the offensive line at Ohio State with injuries, and they kind of reshuffled things and finally got their, you know what, in order. But now they lose their starting center. They're going to have to shuffle things around again 3 days before their biggest game of the season. Well, you know, Oregon was their biggest game, but this game. So that's something to watch early. If Indiana can cause problems for Ohio State on the offensive line, it's not just a talent thing. It's a communication thing. When you're moving guys inside, you're moving a guard to center, you're moving a tackle to guard and all that. So that's something I'd watch for in this game.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football. Now, Mitch, the Heisman Trophy, did Hunter win it last week? Because that play, in that one play in particular, it was sort of like that Desmond Howard play or the Woodson play where it just, you looked at it and said, okay, that was his Heisman winning play. Looking at Hunter, the play with the reverse or a quick pass where he reverse field and then end up scoring from about 15 yards out. Was that his Heisman Trophy winning play?
I think so. I mean, he was pretty much, in my mind, he was he'll get, I don't know if we're allowed to say it yet. I forgot the rules, but he'll get, I think he'll get my vote. I'll put it that way. We do a Heisman straw poll every week. I think I've had him first every week. You're looking at a guy who could be a, you know, if you listen to the NFL scouts, could be a first round wide receiver, could be a first round cornerback. Like, I don't, we've never seen this in my 30 years, whatever, watching college football. I mean, Charles Woodson, but played both ways, but didn't play full time both ways. It's just, it's unprecedented in modern college football. And he's really, really good. And he's on a really, really good team. And he's extremely valuable on that team. And there's other good candidates. Ashton Gentry's obviously having a monster season. Cam Ward, if he can get to the ACC championship game and have a big game there. But I don't see, like, a quarterback can falter down the stretch with a bad game, you know, three picks, throw a pick six to lose a game. I have trouble seeing how Travis Hunter, unless he just gets hurt or has absolute no-shows or in a big moment he gets burned as a cornerback. I'm trying to envision ways in which he could slip. I think he's in just really good position right now.
Now, is the Ashton Gentry, because you look at him and you look at the numbers, they're a monster.
Yeah.
But nobody's been really, truly able to see him here on the East Coast. Now, the program did Travis Hunter a favor by the last couple of weeks putting them on early games so everybody can see him, but nobody's really seen how good Ashton Gentry truly is, and maybe that hurts him?
Possibly. I mean, you know, you can find him if you're looking for him. You know, they're on TV. It's just the hours, or, you know, that's a Friday night national TV games. The thing about Gentry that I – this is kind of dangerous because the award is for best college football player. Mm-hmm. So their NFL possibilities should not factor into this. But the fact that he is so highly regarded by NFL people makes me feel better about voting for him. In the past, like in my years at Athlon Sports, and we do All-America teams, I can tell you there are a lot of guys from non-power conferences that we you know had All-American numbers. They put these monster numbers, and you're trying to figure out, is that guy really good, or is he just feasting on bad competition? So the fact that you watch him and he looks awesome, but he's also going to be, you know, I don't know if he's going to be a first-round pick as a running back and all that stuff, but that he's the first running back right now in the NFL draft, again, proves to me that he is absolutely legit and should be at least a finalist in New York.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, college football editor. And Mitch, here's something that I saw in an Athletic article. I'm not sure if this was one that you officially edited, but you're probably aware of it. They were talking about the committee and philosophical things like margin of victory. That's what Indiana does have. They haven't played a great schedule, but they have dominated in just about all of their games. It's pretty impressive. So I'm curious how that's going to translate on Saturday. And also, non-conference strength of schedule, there was a comparison. I forget which one of the writers was talking about this, but I thought it was an interesting choice of two teams. Colorado State, 7-3 and undefeated in their league. Probably going to match up against Boise State, right, for the Mountain West championship. And then Kentucky, who is sort of at the bottom of the heap, but we saw them be a pretty tough out. They beat Ole Miss and they almost beat Georgia, right? So they're not far from a couple of really big wins, but their record is 1-5 in the league and 4-6. So are you going by the record, or are you really going by the strength of those teams side by side? Because the guy from The Athletic, and I forget which one, maybe you can help me fill
Scott
the gap.
Dockerman, probably.
Yeah, and he had to sort of say, hey, look, you know, what are they doing here? If they're looking by the record, they're not looking at it close enough.
Yeah, I've always been wary in college football of strength of schedule metrics for that reason. Like, I think you can, if you're an educated fan, media member, whatever, observer, you can look at schedules and kind of figure out what's a good schedule or not a good schedule. Like, if you play in a power conference and you play one really good non-conference game against a top 10 team, and another really solid one, and then two really, really bad teams, like, that's going to bring your numbers down. But you can look at that schedule and say, yeah, that's a really good schedule. They tested themselves non-conference, and they played another good team. So, like, again, you're making a good point, and Scott, his story, made a good point. You can't just look at records. And I think the committee looks at everything. They've got metrics that probably include opponents' records, but then they're just looking at schedules, too. That's the one thing that's easier than in college basketball. There's 12 regular season games. You're not looking at, you know, 30 games or whatever. So, I would say this. It's like the committee, they come out with one ranking, but it's 13 people, and all those people have different things they look at. If I'm on the committee, I might be more impressed with margin of victory and not just who you beat, but how you beat them. Someone else might be more impressed with how you played on the road and all that stuff. So it's their job to come to a consensus, but you got to keep that in mind. Just because that's the committee's ranking, not everyone in that room thinks that way.
If it comes down to it, we don't know what's going to happen. But if it comes down to the last at-large, I know I've asked you this exact same question with NCAA basketball selection, but it might even be more pronounced here because there's less spots. Let's say it's between Tennessee and Indiana, and Tennessee would be the fifth team from the SEC, and if you leave Indiana out, that would be five SEC and only three Big Ten. There's money, a lot of money at stake. I'm not saying that they couldn't do the right thing, but I feel like that would be a tough thing. If you might say, look, it's razor thin, I might lean Tennessee if it's only about those two teams, but 4-4 looks politically a lot better.
Does not matter, should not matter, don't think it does matter.
You don't think it does matter?
You call me naive, and that's fine. I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I think they will pick the best teams. I think the NCAA tournament selection committee picks in college basketball picks the best teams. I just think that you know, if Indiana gets the nod, it's not going to be because it's the Big Ten. It's because seven committee members to six committee members think they're better. So again, that's just the way I look at it. I'm a rule follower. I think they follow the rules there, but it obviously will be an interesting debate. And I just, as a slight tangent or not a tangent, I'm just, the past 2 days to me have just been fascinating. The debates on this topic about just the passion of college football fans and media members just saying with absolute, you know, just everyone's so certain that their opinion is so correct that there's no way that Indiana would have this right. Like, you know, they'd have four losses in the Big Ten. Like, there's a lot of people that I see, put it this way, on social media that I think are really smart, and I value their, like, I think they do a good job covering the sport or whatever, and they just are so opposed to each other, or there's like three different thoughts, and they all, you think about it, like, that person made a good point, that person made a good point. It's just, it's all coming out this week, seemingly, as we get closer to this, and I don't think it's going to die down. The thing with the four teams is, there wasn't as much debate, because it all sort of worked itself out. There weren't that many spots, so there weren't that many debates to be had, but this year, in this first iteration of it, it seems like there's a ton of them.
All right, I watched LSU and Florida pretty closely, because when you're in Vancouver, you don't have a lot of games that you can choose from. You got to kind of go what's on there. But LSU-Florida was a good game. So let's talk about the next opponent for both. We'll end up with the LSU-Vanderbilt matchup. But Florida looks like they've found something, especially down there. Do you think they have a shot against Ole Miss to spoil the whole Lane Kiffin? Well, we don't want to be in the championship game, you know, that kind of thing. So what about that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, they played – they've won three straight home games by double figures, Kentucky, UCF, and LSU. They had the no-show at Texas, but Lagway didn't play in that game. They played well, you know, the UT game, the Tennessee game was in Knoxville, I believe, right? I mean, they played well up there and could have easily won that game. It's been a strange season for them because we all just assumed Napier was going to lose, but they, for the most part, have battled all season.
Georgia would be an example, too, right, where they didn't – the quarterback was hurt. They had the walk-on from my high school. He was a Winter Park Wildcat. Yeah, and he was they were right in the game, right? It turned out the score was not indicative.
Winter Park. Yeah, finally a good athlete from Winter Park coming out there. yeah, I mean, that was mid-fourth quarter, I think, before Georgia pulled away. So, yeah, give them credit. So, yes, I do think they can. They can. You know, Ole Miss has been pretty good of late. You know, clearly, you know, they've recovered from the Kentucky game. One of the more underrated great resume points for any team nationally right now is Ole Miss 27, South Carolina 3 in Columbia. You're not going to say that's – I'm not saying that's the best win in the country, but to beat South Carolina by 24 points in Columbia is one of the most impressive wins. I'll say it that way. So I think you know, I'm not considering to say Ole Miss, you know, has a ton of flaws. You know, I think that they showed in that Georgia game that some issues there having the offensive line have improved there. So I don't know if I'd pick Florida, but if you told me that Florida wins that game by a touchdown, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Okay, so let's end up with Vanderbilt LSU. We talked to Clark Lee yesterday, as we always do. He definitely wants to feel the optimism that the week off helped them rejuvenate a little bit. He admitted that he felt like his team was fatigued in not only the game against South Carolina, but also even the game at Auburn. He felt like they had to go on the reserve tank to win that one. He did also admit that he feels like the league is figuring out his offense a little bit, and they're not getting the cheap, scheme yardage, right, that maybe they were early in the season. So with all that in the backdrop, what do you think about the specific matchup with LSU? Because LSU, you catch them in the week after they know they're out of the mix. Like, if they had won in Florida, this game would be enormous for them to try to hold serve and stay in the mix for the championship game.
Yeah, I'm usually not a big, and we've talked about this in the years past, it comes up a lot with, like, Tennessee playing Georgia. Like, is Georgia mad, or did they coming off a win? I'm usually not into that much because each week is different. But I think for Vanderbilt, this is a good time to be playing LSU after a difficult loss where their season, their goals are shot. They're coming home. Vanderbilt's obviously having a very good season, but can Brian Kelly instill in those guys' mind that this is a better Vanderbilt team and all that stuff? So I think from a psychological standpoint, it's a good opportunity for Vanderbilt. I think it's going to be Vanderbilt's health and ability to run the ball and some of the scheme things you mentioned. Like, I thought earlier in the year, Vanderbilt had a lot of success with, like, Cedric Alexander just kind of getting those bursts up the middle for 6-8 yards because the defense was so consumed or concerned with Diego Pavia beating him on the outside or quick throws to the outside. Those yards haven't seemingly been there recently. A lot of that, I think, is Cedric Alexander and the running backs have been banged up. But, you know, you look at LSU, they've been susceptible to running quarterbacks. You know, Texas A&M goes for 242, Alabama 311. Earlier in the year, South Carolina against LSU, 243. So I think we don't know how healthy Diego Pavia is, and Clark might have been just, you know, throwing a curveball, but he did mention that if Diego is banged up and not running the offense, that they could go to Nate Johnson, who is one of the fastest players in the country at quarterback, is unproven throwing the ball there. But I think if Vanderbilt's going to win this game, it's going to have a lot of success running the ball.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic. It wouldn't be a segment from Mitch without a pot shot at Willie's athletic prowess.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to sit here, you know, a multi-sport intramural star at Vanderbilt. We can talk about that next week.
We'll make time for that.
We have to find some footage of that, Mitch, on the field. Like, they just showed Christopher Russo on ESPN playing tennis. So surely Mitch on the softball field or on the basketball court on the campus of Vanderbilt.
I'll draw some pictures, okay?
Sketches.
I'll fax them over.
Fax them over.
Are we going to have to bust out the old school reel to watch these clips for Mitch?
Yeah, exactly.
And Mitch, it's so easy now with AI and all this other stuff. You don't even have to do that. It's just easy to put it together.
AI is a good idea.
Exactly.
I'm getting someone on that, Derek. I'm getting someone on that. Thank you.
Athletics got people.
Mitch, always a pleasure. Talk next week.
Take care, guys. Yep.
Mitch Light joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans next. Tune into Stillman and Company today from 2 to 6 p.m. for your chance to win Jelly Roll tickets for his performance at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, November 26th, less than a week from now. The Jelly Roll ticket contest is supplied by Chiba Hut Subs, serving up dank food and chill vibes, now open in Donaldson.